This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Procter & Gamble is the latest major U.S. corporation to face a conservative backlash against its marketing approach for language it used in a puberty pamphlet distributed in the United Kingdom. But P&G is far from alone. In recent months, Target and Anheuser-Busch have also come under fire for marketing and products related to LGBTQ consumers. Joining me now to discuss the controversy and how these companies are responding are Xavier University Associate Professor Leslie Rasmussen, PhD. Welcome, Leslie.
Thank you.
And Cincinnati Enquirer business reporter Alexander Coolidge. Thanks for being here, Alex.
Hi there, Lucy.
We'd like to hear from you, too. Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Alex, explain a bit more about this P&G campaign. I know this isn't the first time P&G has faced backlash over a campaign. What's the latest?
The controversy popped up actually in England initially. Some parents complained to the a newspaper there, the I believe it was the Mirror, basically. It was the Daily Mail. Basically, P&G was distributing a pamphlet that referred to girls as young people with female sex organs. And the parents that the paper did not identify expressed concern that that might be very confusing to kids, and sort of it created a little bit of outrage there. And then conservative personality Megyn Kelly tweeted about it here in the U.S., and there have been a few articles on it basically since then. Including ours, basically.
Right. And wasn't there P&G dealt with this before in a campaign that referenced toxic masculinity. Didn't the company have some issues with that a while back?
Yeah, P&G's done, like a lot of big marketing companies and brands out there, have been sort of a lightning rod because they've embraced some more sort of social type of messages in some of their advertising. In 2019, they put out an ad sort of saying, urging men to, it was a Gillette ad to sort of stand up against toxic masculinity. They also did have another, they had an ad called First Shave, which featured a trans man using one of their products that also was a little controversial with some folks. Also, P&G about 5 years ago did a 2-minute spot that they put on the internet. It's called The Talk, which was which depicted a family, an African-American family, having a blunt discussion about safety, that sort of thing. So this is not totally new for P&G. They've been incorporating sort of social messages in some of their marketing materials and then their advertising. And it's the common theme is sort of inclusion. They want to sort of they feel a lot of pressure to take stands to appeal to a new generation of consumers out there. Many brands are doing this same sort of thing, it's the common thread of a lot of their marketing message has been sort of toward inclusion, being aware of people who are different than yourself, and being inclusive.
Sure,
that's basically the gist of it.
Well, and Leslie, all kinds of corporations have been marketing goods and products and services to a more diverse group of people and consumers for many years. I mean, there's a profit motive for them, right? Is it strictly about reaching more people with spending power? I mean, what's the reason behind this?
I think you've touched on it right there. So, I mean, there are countless studies and research that supports evidence that younger buyers especially want to do business with brands that align with their values. And Gen Z has proven powerful. And not just Gen Z, but millennials and those of us with that buying power are more inclined to support businesses that tend to be inclusive. The problem is that those terms, inclusive, inclusion, belonging, diversity, equity, those have been hijacked and manipulated. In the case of P&G, what I would say is it factual that if you have female organs, you're likely to have a period and need these products? Yes. So it's factual. The idea that it is taking some sort of political stance, I think, is part of that hyperbole and conjecture that we're seeing right now where these terms are being sort of hijacked and people are being told they mean something different when, in fact, they don't.
Gotcha. Well, and as we mentioned, the P&G is just the latest in a string of companies recently that's been on the receiving end of some of this backlash. Leslie, for anyone who's maybe not familiar, explain what happened with the Bud Light brand in March.
Sure. So Bud Light sent an influencer packet to Dylan Mulvaney, who is famously a trans woman, actually attended the University of Cincinnati, so has some local ties here. And Dylan documented her life as a female and living her authentic self on TikTok and became, you know, amassed a following. So Bud Light sent this kit that had her face on beer cans, and she made a TikTok about it. And then the next thing you know, TikTok and other social media platforms were blowing up with regular people, celebrities saying they were no longer going to support Bud Light and I'm going to, you know, shoot up my Bud Light cans and so on. So that's ultimately what has happened with Bud Light. And I think that controversy, if you will, has extended longer than maybe they thought it might.
Sure. And as Anheuser-Busch, as I understand, they backed down a little bit. The company did some. Talk to us about how the company reacted and whether that helped or hurt them.
It's interesting you say that. They put out a statement, I believe it was Friday at the end of the day of the first week where this happened. And it did contain the message of inclusion, but there were also some keywords that were very telling, and things like related to patriotism in the country and that sort of thing. So there was sort of this underlying message of, yes, we are still inclusive and we didn't mean to start a fight here, but also, you know, using some of these buzzwords that resonate with more perhaps conservative consumers as well. So it really didn't do much, and this has continued further than I think many of us really expected it to.
Were they, in your view, kind of trying to have it both ways? You know, we're inclusive, but we also love, you know, we're also patriots. If you feel like you're a patriot by shooting up our beer, you know, we're on your side too.
I think they did try to kind of ride the middle, and maybe they should have been prepared for the reaction. And I would make an argument that an organization of this size has done enough research to know you're going to expect a backlash, but at some point that tapers off and you start to recover. So the recovery process has definitely been delayed. Maybe they overshot their market. Maybe they didn't anticipate the immense backlash that would happen. A lot of times these things are fleeting crises. You know, they hang around for a minute, a month, a week, but then they're gone. And Bud Light's pushing 3 months at this point. And it could simply be because of the cultural climate we're in right now where these issues are being amplified. And what are we really talking about? 1-2% of the population here. But because culturally and politically these things are amplified and at the forefront right now, that might be impacting the longevity of this particular situation for them.
I want to remind our listeners, we're talking about the conservative backlash against U.S. corporations and their marketing and products, especially related to LGBTQ consumers. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. Leslie, Target became the next target for this criticism, even though the company's been has had Pride Month merchandise for many, many years. The Pride Month merchandise came out, I guess, in May, and there was this backlash. First, talk to us about what merchandise was at the center of all this.
There were several things, but primarily the things that at least I saw were swimsuits that had I believe they're called gussets, to provide some extra coverage. And then they also carried a line of swimwear from a brand that makes trans-friendly attire. And so those were in the stores. Unfortunately, it was also misrepresented online as well. And people were going into stores and showing them and saying that they were for kids and not when they were, in fact, actually adult sizes. So that, you know, that again clouds it. That's a little bit of a misinformation campaign happening there as well.
Yeah, Alex, what was the backlash there? What kind of what did Target face?
Basically, the online outrage machine and calls for boycotts and all that fun stuff, and the usual.
And violence.
We can talk more about that. What
they received? There were people online making threats against their employees. There were people going in and recording employees while they asked them questions about it. And here's the deal: at the end of the day, if you're receiving threats in a climate today where we see gun violence regularly, somebody's not coming to the Target CEO to shoot them up. They're going to go into the store on Beachmont Avenue or fill in the blank. And Target was really put in an awful situation by that. And we're saying, so social media then was used as the vehicle to carry out these threats of violence. So it was no longer just a boycott. It was violence. And I would hate to be the CEO that has to make the decision there. But you have to protect your consumers. You have to protect your employees as well. It's a horrible situation.
Yeah. And Alex, didn't Target pull back a bit on some of these products, citing the need to keep employees safe? What did the company do?
You know, I don't cover Target, so I'm not familiar with their exact moves. I believe they did pull some product, though.
Gotcha. I apologize. Are you familiar with kind of what they pulled?
Yeah, I followed it a little. So they pulled some of the products that were garnering the most attention, and those were primarily the trans
Kind of tuck-friendly bathing suits.
And then they moved other items to the back of the stores. And from what I understand, that was primarily done in the southern region. But I'm sure it happened across the board.
Leslie, does that hurt the company with its more liberal or progressive customer base to react in those ways?
I don't think so. And here's why. I think that when situations like that emerge, there is an immediate reaction. But if you go two steps further instead of just one, you quickly realize, wow, there were threats of violence at the Target stores where people go, masses of people go. And I think that there is a level of understanding. I've tried to follow the backlash on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And, you know, this is anecdotal, but most of it seems, the response seems to be somewhat understanding of the fact that this was an impossible situation because people were using, you know, violence essentially as a threat to remove or actually erase people in this case.
We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. And later in the program, we'll talk with comedian Hari Kondabolu about family, fatherhood, and how he tackles race in his stand-up. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We continue our discussion about the conservative backlash against U.S. corporations and their marketing and products, especially related to LGBTQ consumers. My guests are Xavier University Associate Professor Leslie Rasmussen, Ph.D., and Cincinnati Inquirer business reporter Alexander Coolidge. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Before our break, Leslie, we were talking about this chain in pretty short order of companies that have faced this conservative backlash. How often historically have companies faced backlash over this kind of marketing? And why now? What do you think is going on here?
I think companies have always faced backlash for things that appear to be political or for taking stances on social issues. The rise in that is certainly due to the climate that we're in and also technology. The reach is there that was not there 20 years ago or 30 years ago. I was listening to a podcast recently that talked about how corporations were scary to people. They still are kind of, right, when we hear and talk about them now. But in a sense, that power dynamic has been flipped because we have the internet, we have social media, and those vehicles for a person in Cincinnati or Texas or wherever to be able to have this massive reach and share their message of whether it's discontent or a call for a boycott or so on. So the vehicle to amplify those messages are just greater now. But I think it's always been there. They've always had to deal with things like that.
Sure. And, you know, Leslie, there's been so much state legislation across the United States related to transgender people, whether it's minors and the kind of care they can receive or, you know, the bathrooms they have to use at school, the sports they play. How much impact do you think all of that is having on these protests against corporations?
It's all part of it. It is all intertwined, and I certainly don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but it is absolutely related. That is the message people are receiving right now to be concerned about these things. And so when we see something as simple as a rainbow on a T-shirt, that is going to be triggering to some folks, you know, whether it's warranted or not, but simply because we're in this environment right now where we're seeing what I would call an outright assault on perhaps the most marginalized group in our country.
Alex, have you, in all the time you've been covering P&G, at the top of our conversation, you mentioned a number of times the company's been challenged or criticized about different campaigns and messaging. Do you think that's changed how P&G operates at all? Does that have an impact on what kind of messaging the company, you know, uses and puts out in the world?
I think they listen to it, but I can't really think of a campaign where they've sort of pulled some sort of mea culpa type situation where it's like, no, we totally got this wrong, and nothing comes to mind immediately. They have found themselves targeted a number of times, over the years. I've covered them for, more than 10 years now. It does seem like there is just sort of more, as companies go more into these sort of socially themed messaging campaigns, there is more outrage out there these days than, say, I don't know, even 10 years ago, I think.
Yeah. Leslie, how does a company balance being inclusive in order to reach that broader market and attract those consumers and their money without alienating more conservative or traditional customers, or should companies even be worried about that?
I don't think companies should be worried about it. I think they should invest the time, money, and research to understanding their audience and to target their audience. And if that means you are an organization that stands for inclusion, then that's who you are. And that is going to bode well with your target demographic. And the same way that Chick-fil-A has been successful, despite their being vocal in terms of their conservative values. Ben and Jerry's another example. Politics is absolutely built into their brand, right? But not conservative, liberal. And they cater to their target audience. I don't think there's anything wrong with these brands trying to be inclusive and reach everyone and say, hey, you know, if you want a chicken sandwich, come here, or our ice cream, or fill in the blank. But they just have to be prepared for the backlash if there is going to be some from a particular group of folks. Corporate social responsibility is not new. That's been around forever. But right now, you know, we're trying to, what does that mean to the conservatives and in the conservative sense? And the big examples we have are Hobby Lobby and Chick-fil-A. And that's it, really. So I think CSR in terms of that aspect is having to be worked out right now. We don't know the answer, but we do know that people with major buying power, like I said earlier, Gen Z, millennials, and so on, they are itching to do business and align with brands that are more inclusive. That doesn't mean you have to go so far left, but simply including everyone seems like a reasonable place to land, from my perspective, anyway.
You mentioned, you know, that we've talked about how this has been going on for a long time, but for many, many years, you could argue for decades or generations, conservative Republicans, to mention that party, were about, you know, asking companies to kind of stay in their lane, worry about profits. There didn't seem to be as much vocal, protest or backlash for companies, right. You know, that you did see it on for more liberal people and groups where they would, you know, talk about Chick-fil-A or these other organizations, and we shouldn't shop there, we shouldn't eat there. What do you think, is there something that had the conservative movement kind of turn the corner where not only these companies became targets, but their actions became kind of more successful in terms of getting attention and keeping that attention going? I mean, you mentioned this Bud Light thing is going on 3 months now. I mean, there seems to be a lot more momentum behind some of this than maybe in the past.
Absolutely. And I'm going to go back to, I think we're just at a time right now where we see violence, we see outrage, we see all of that. And we have an incredibly powerful vehicle right now to carry that message and to carry it very far. And so more and more people are joining that fight. And brands need to consider that, I suppose, and make the most informed strategic decisions with anticipating what that could potentially look like for them when they engage in these you know, campaign decisions.
Yeah. Leslie, do you think we as consumers should be expecting our companies to take stands on these cultural issues?
I do. That's my personal perspective. But because I'm part of that group that does want to align with folks that are just inclusive of people, of everyone, of humans. But that is a choice that a brand has to make. And I think that we're at a place where you can't say you're not political anymore. And then you have to pull apart our basic human rights and human dignity, the right to exist. Is that political? And culture has right now said, yeah, it is political. And I can disagree all I want. But because of that, I do think we're going to keep seeing brands sort of take these positions. They might be a little more careful and walk slowly into it. But I do think we are going to see that it shows that they have a personality, that they are not the big, scary corporation either. And they have money. They can research and understand their audience and know exactly what's going to resonate and hit with them.
I've been talking with Xavier University Associate Professor Leslie Rasmussen, PhD, and Cincinnati Inquirer business reporter Alexander Coolidge. Thank you both so much. This is Cincinnati Edition.